This morning, though, I wanted us to share in the study of unnamed heroes. I found it was interesting while I was there, very few of the people knew where Butler was. About two or three of them knew where Butler was. Mostly that was folks who were from the Alabama area and had moved out to Texas. And I'm not counting me and my dad. But there were very few that knew where Butler was. Very few knew anything at all about there even being a church here in Butler. And no one I met knew the name of any of you. But don't be discouraged. That's okay, because I didn't know the names of any of their congregations, of those other preachers that were there. Certainly got to meet several of the members of the university church there that was hosting it, because they were there every night for the meeting going on that week. But all throughout our brotherhood, in this country as well as in other countries, there are faithful men and women who are steadfastly holding to the truth. They're coming together this morning. Some already have. Some will in the next hour. And they're coming together to worship God in spirit and in truth. All over other places in the world, it'll be later today or it's already happened. But throughout this whole world, there are Christians. And we don't know most of their names. And most of them don't know our names. Sometimes, because of that fact, people say, well, I'm not important. I'm not big enough. I'm not important enough. Nobody even knows who I am, so I don't matter. And that's not true. We are important to God, even if no one else on earth knows our name. And I want us to look at a few of the cases in the Bible, and we're just going to mention a few of these quickly, and then we want to focus in on one thing. You can write these down and look them up if you want to later on. In Acts chapter 9, we're familiar with that chapter because it is where Paul becomes the Apostle Paul, in essence, even though he's not called that yet, but he goes from being the one who persecutes the church to being one of the greatest advocates for the church there in Acts chapter 9. And shortly after his conversion, after Ananias comes and teaches him and baptizes him into Christ, down in verse number 24, we see that there were, in verse 23, we see that there were some Jews who wanted to kill him. Of course they did. He was a traitor, so they wanted to kill him. But in verse 24, we see that their laying in wait was known of Saul. So Saul, or Paul, knew about it. He found out about it somehow. Now, we're not told how he found out. We don't know if there was a spy among the Jewish ranks who leaked it out. Or we don't know if one of the Christians there overheard it. But somehow, Paul found it out. And then in verse 25, because of the fact that these Jews were watching the gates day and night, and they weren't going to let Paul out. They were going to kill him if he tried to escape. In verse 25, the disciples took him in the middle of the night, and they let him down out of a window near the wall that was on the wall of the city. And they let him out through that window in a basket and let him down to the ground. Who held that rope and let him down? We don't know. But that's a hero. Not named. Never mentioned again. Don't have any idea who that individual may have been. But they did something that was essential to helping continue the spread of the gospel. What if those Jews had caught Paul? What if they'd thrown him out the window and he fell and broke his neck? No, they let him down with that rope and that basket. Somebody had to hold that rope. That was someone who was important. Then in verse 30 again, he's in trouble. He seems to always be in trouble. This is in Jerusalem. And in this case, the brethren found out that somebody, some of the Jews, again, wanted to kill him. Now, they couldn't answer his argument, so they thought the best way to shut him up was just to kill him, so he couldn't talk anymore. And we see that then in verse 30, when they knew it, they found out about it, they brought him down to Caesarea and sent him to Tarsus. So they took him, they escorted him to keep him safe. Well, which brethren in the church there in Jerusalem did that? Don't know. Don't know which ones it was. But they did it. Their names never given. But they were heroes. They risked their lives. If the Jews had found out that they were moving Paul, they very likely would have attacked them and tried to kill him on the road. These brethren risked their lives for the spread of the gospel and for a fellow brother in Christ. But they're never named. We don't know who they were. But God knows. Who were these brethren who went with Paul? They were heroes. Then we see in Acts chapter 23 and verse 16 a similar situation. Paul's always getting himself into trouble and about to get killed by somebody, it seems. And in this case, in verse number 16 of chapter 23, his sister's son hears that they are planning to kill Paul. And so since he hears about it, he comes first and tells Paul about it. And then Paul calls the centurion and sends the young man to the centurion to tell what has happened and what he's heard. We don't know Paul's sister's name. We don't know his sister's son's name, his nephew. We don't know their names, but they're important. They're heroes that work together in these things. And many times at the end of the letters, Paul lists names of people who did great things. Let's not think that those names that are listed are the only people that were in that congregation. Certainly there were others, and others who did good works and who did good things, but they just weren't named in Paul's letters. We need to think about that, though. We think about another unnamed hero. We think about the writer of the book of Hebrews. I know a lot of people think that it was Paul. He had a habit of putting his name on his works, though. But whether it was or wasn't, we don't know. We don't know that name, and yet, what a great work that book is, teaching us of the superiority of Christ over the law of Moses and the new covenant over the old covenant. Oh, what a wonderful book. What if whoever wrote that, penned that letter, had said, well, you know, I'm not going to write this down because my name's not on it and I won't get recognition for it. And I won't be important enough, so I'm not going to write that down. And sometimes we focus too much on the praise of men and the recognition that we get from men. But God knows who wrote that. And they'll receive their reward from Him. If we seek to receive our reward of men, then when we receive it, that's all we get. But if we seek to please God and receive our reward from Him, then we'll be enjoying that for all eternity. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, Paul talks about the work that he did and how he needed to be supported in that. You know, anytime you have mission going on where the church is not established, somebody's got to pay for that. And if there's not a church established there to support it, then that work has to come from other places, other people, other congregations. But here in Philippians chapter 4, in verses 15 and 16, Paul says that you Philippians know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but you only. He said this church in Philippi was solely responsible for his support. Now that's quite a task, to completely support him in his work. And then he goes on to say in verse 16 that even in Thessalonica, you sent once and again unto my necessity. Well, who were all these brethren? Well, we know it was the church at Philippi. But he doesn't list who the biggest... Well, and so-and-so gave a 1,000 drachmas, and so-and-so gave me 100 shillings. And no, he didn't list all that. But they knew who they were and that they had supported that work. And God knows who they were. We see also then in verse 22, you want to talk about a hero. He says, all the saints salute you, chiefly they that are of Caesar's household. You know why he didn't name those brethren? If he'd have put their names down on paper, they'd have been dead. They were in Caesar's household. They were, may have been some of his servants, maybe even some of his family members. And they were Christians. That's a hero. They were in the devil's den. Right there in the midst of where the persecution of the church was going to spring from. Remember Nero? You remember what he did to Christians? He had some gardens. And he didn't like to go out in those gardens at night in the dark. And so what he did was he would take the Christians that he had caught and he'd dip them in oil of a type that would burn and put them up on stakes and light them on fire so that he could then ride around in his gardens and enjoy the plants and flowers and trees and whatever he had grown in there. You want to think that being a Christian and being living in Caesar's household doesn't make you a hero? Oh, it sure does. And yet, they were never named. Probably in this case, for their own safety, they weren't named. But God knew who they were. Now I want us to think about one of the churches in New Testament times. Let's think about Ephesus for a minute. We have a letter called Ephesians written to the church at Ephesus. 6 chapters, long, not the biggest by any means, but there's that letter. Written by the Apostle Paul. If we look back to the book of Acts, there are a couple of chapters that talk about Ephesus. In chapters 19 and 20 of the book of Acts, Ephesus is mentioned and the work that Paul did in establishing the church there is described. In that place, it says that Paul was there in Ephesus for over 2 years. In Acts chapter 19, it says he was there for over 2 years. In Acts chapter 20, when he's talking to the elders, in verse 31, he says that he actually was there for 3 years warning them. Now, I know a lot of you would like to have had the Apostle Paul as your preacher instead of me. But he's not preaching anymore. He's retired. So you have to put up with that. But he preached at this church for 3 years. Oh, what great years that must have been. To have the Apostle Paul as your preacher working with you in the local church. What a benefit. What a blessing. Then when he left, he let Timothy be the preacher there. And when he writes to the book of 1 Timothy, which another 6-chapter book, written to Timothy while Timothy was at Ephesus, while he was the preacher at Ephesus. Don't know how long Timothy stayed there, but Paul and Timothy both preached for this church. This church was so dear to him that as he was on his way to Jerusalem the final time before he was arrested and sent to Rome, in Acts chapter 20, he called the Ephesian elders together. Now, we don't know their names, but we know they were important to him because he called them together. And he warned them about the things that would happen. And He preached to them again and reminded them of His former preaching and teaching. He also sent a fellow you may not be as familiar with by the name of Tychicus. And He sent him to Ephesus at one point. So you've got a church that was begun by the Apostle Paul, that he preached at for 3 years, that Timothy preached at, that Tychicus preached at, and some people believe that when he talks to Yodius and Syntyche, talks about them in the book that he wrote, the letter he wrote to the church there, when he talks about it, some translations will say a true yoke fellow, but some people believe that that was the name of the local preacher there at that time. And if so, he would have been named. But you've got Paul there, Timothy there, Tychicus there. He writes them a letter. He calls the elders out. He also sent the letter of 1 Timothy while he was working there. And yet, when we turn to the book of Revelation, just a few years after that, after all those advantages, all those blessings, all those big-name preachers that they had, what condition is that church in? It's one of seven that's given, the letter is written to in Revelation. One of seven churches of Asia. And it's the first one written to. And if you read those first seven verses of Revelation chapter 2, you'll see that despite all of the advantages, despite all of the big names that had been through there, despite the fact that they had received a letter directly from the Apostle Paul, as well as their preacher having received a letter from the Apostle Paul while he was preaching there, this church was failing. It was a disaster. In fact, they're in such bad shape that Jesus tells them that if they don't hurry up and straighten up, He's not even going to consider them one of His churches anymore. How did they get there? All those advantages. Maybe they became too dependent on Paul or Timothy and they couldn't stand on their own. I don't know. But there were some problems there. They lost their way because they lost their focus. He says, you've lost your first love. They lost their focus on Christ. Now let's look at the next church there in Revelation 2. Verses 8 through 11. Little bitty short. As far as I know, this is the only time in the New Testament that this town or church is even mentioned, and it's only for about 4 verses. And this church, he says, I know your works, and your tribulation, and your poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried, and you shall have tribulation 10 days. But be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. We quote that verse a lot, don't we? Be faithful until death. That wasn't written to Ephesus. They needed to repent and go back and do the things they had done back in the beginning when Paul was there. They'd lost their way. But this church, who started the church in Smyrna? Don't know. Was it one of the apostles, or was it one of the other Christians who was scattered during the persecution? Was it somebody that was there on the day of Pentecost and then went back home to Smyrna, and they were from there? We don't know who started it. Never named. Who preached there? Don't know. Not any of the big names. We don't read about how Peter held a gospel meeting there. or about how Titus was the summer intern there or something like that. We don't read about any of that. Don't know who preached there. What about elders? We don't even know if this church even had elders. Probably it did. That was one of the things that they emphasized in the first century, and we still need to emphasize today, is the proper organization of the church. If there were men qualified, they would have had elders, but we certainly don't know who they were. Paul certainly never called them, hey, come over here, I need to talk to you and give you a special message. And yet, here they are. No big names. Nobody famous. Nobody important. But they're faithful. Sometimes, we live in a small town. We have a relatively small church, although I was talking to somebody this week who thought we had a big church, because where he preaches there's only 12 people. So, you know, they thought, wow, yeah, you got a big church. But we think of ourselves as a small congregation in a small town. And sometimes we look somewhat enviously or jealously at the big city churches. Well, they got all that money, and they get so-and-so to come in there and preach their meetings, and they got so-and-so preaches to them every Sunday, and on and on we go about all the people there and all the money and all the things that they've got that we don't. And yet, look at this church, Smyrna. They were a small church. They weren't big. They were poor, but they were rich. The problem that some of the big churches have is that they depend too much on their size and their wealth and their big city that they dwell in. We know we can't count on that. So we know we've got to work harder. We've got to do more, because we can't expect that we're just going to have it all handed to us. We need to look at the church at Smyrna as our example. Another one there is Thyatira, and you can read about that one down at the end of chapter 2. We're not going to look at that, but I said Thyatira. I'm sorry. Not Thyatira. Philadelphia. That's in chapter 3, verses 7 through 13. Philadelphia. Thyatira was another one of those wicked ones. Philadelphia is the other one that of those seven churches, only two that Jesus didn't say anything against. He had only praise for them, only good things, and encouragement to keep going. But we need to think about those two churches. But what's more, what we need to think about and what we need to remember is these are just the ones that are named. How many more churches were there that were never mentioned in Scripture? We read in Acts 8 about the Ethiopian eunuch. He went back home to Ethiopia rejoicing. I dare say, even though there's no Scripture to prove it, I dare say when he got back there, he started a congregation. And I imagine that he converted others, teaching them the things that Philip had taught him. But we never read about the church in Ethiopia in the Bible. It's never mentioned. There are several others. As we look at Acts chapter 2, there were people from all over the place that were in Jerusalem for that Passover, for that Pentecost feast, rather. They couldn't stay in Jerusalem forever. They had lives to get back to. They had jobs, the farms, or whatever the case may be, and they had to go home. When they went back home, they took their Christianity with them. But we don't read about all of the different churches that were established because of them, because of their work. In fact, as we read the book of Acts, really, after we read about the church in Jerusalem and a little bit about Samaria, after the Apostle Paul is converted and becomes an apostle, he and Barnabas and their work is about the only ones we read about. What did the rest of the apostles do? Who did they teach? Where did they go? We don't even have their writings, a lot of them. We don't have letters that they wrote to all these different places. I just want us to understand, as we close this morning, that you don't have to be famous or well-known or important in this world to be famous and important to God. There will be millions who on the day of judgment will hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," that we've never heard of and never will hear of until that day. And if we are faithful and we live as we should, then on that day He will say the same to us, and there will be millions of others who will hear our names called and they never knew us. That's why it's so important that we're not the ones who decide all these things, because we don't know. But God knows. We don't have to have our name written in the Bible in order to have our name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And so as we look at ourselves and we think, well, we're just a little church in the middle of nowhere and we're not very important, we need to rethink that. We are important. Do you remember when Elijah thought he was the only one left? God said, "No, you're not." He said, "I've got 7,000 who haven't knelt to Baal." But He didn't name all of them. Elijah didn't know any of their names, but God knew. And God knows what good works we do. And He knows who's faithful to Him, and He knows who's not. If you're here this morning and you're faithful to Him, keep it up. Don't quit. Don't give up. Don't get weary in well-doing. If you're here this morning and you're not living faithful to Him, straighten up. Get up. Get going. Do right so that your name can be in that Book of Life. I hope to see all of you there that day, because I don't know a lot of those other folks that will be there that day. I'd like to see some folks I know. And I ever noticed that when you go somewhere, you want to sit by somebody you know. You're like, "Ooh, I'm all alone here." You can be in a crowd of 5,000 or 50,000, and if you don't know anybody there, you feel like you're all alone. The good news is, when we get there, we'll be with our brothers and sisters, even if we don't know their names. We'll be family. If you have a need to respond to the invitation this morning, I ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.